Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so without further ado, I now have the honor of introducing Sebastian Gaggiero. He has done much work on discovering the relational dynamics that generate value that can create a livable future within communities. He is an international speaker, a consultant for Maastrichtica, as well as a member of the board of directors of Brave Up. So with no further ado and much anticipation, I shall hand over to you two guys.
Brilliant, thank you very much. So I'm really excited about speaking to Sebastian today. This is one of a kind of a trio of interviews. We've done interviews with Humberto Mancherana, who's a biologist and philosopher. Hermina de Villa, who is a therapist and systems thinker, is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah.
And we'll be talking a little about both of their work in this interview. Now, Humberto and Hermina founded an organization called Maastrichtica, which Sebastian is a consultant for. So you can see, I just wanted to give a little bit of a sense of the context of this so that that's kind of where we're coming from. So just to kick off, Sebastian, what's your role at Maastrichtica?
Well, thank you, Adrian. Thank you, Zoe. And thank you, everyone, for being here. My role in Maastrichtica, I will say nowadays, is to continue expanding the invitation and the reflections that Humberto and Jimena have created for the past 20 years, having as a starting point for their reflections, this question about cultural pain and suffering. How is it that the pain and suffering for which we ask for relational help is always rooted and caused by the culture that we live? And by culture in that term, they mean the networks of conversations that we inhabit. The relational pain and suffering arises by the interactions that we create, by the manner of living that we conserve. So my role in Maastrichtica nowadays is to expand the understanding that they have developed to international spheres like this one, to bring it to the English audience, to the Italian audience, and to be able to pollinate with the virus of reflection and awareness.
That's so fascinating because I know I kind of came into this whole conversation, if you like, through the work of Humberto Mancherana, mm-hmm. who I'm an embodiment theorist, and his work in that whole area is, to say it's foundational is not an understatement. It's absolutely key to the way that the whole field developed. And now I'm hugely excited to learn about the work of Hermina. And then, of course, the two of them, which is, this is extraordinary. How many times does somebody of their stature in the world of philosophy, thought, therapy, come together and create an organization. That's absolutely extraordinary. Well, that's
yes. Actually, that point is an interesting one, because Umberto did all his career within universities, within faculty, within the academia. But the invitation to create an organization as Matristica was the intention of Ximena of democratizing this understanding, of not only keeping it secluded for those who have a PhD or that are going on that path, but to everyday people, to consultants, to coaches, to a baker, to whoever has questions and an interest to deepen in the understanding of our human nature.
So I wonder if you could unpack a little bit, just as an introduction, their work, just to let people know we've got interviews with both Umberto and Ximena. Umberto interviews on, Ximena's interview is going to be on later this week, tomorrow night, I think it's being broadcast. So I wonder if you could say a little bit about their work so that people have a sense of where we're going.
Okay, perfect. Well, Umberto Maturana, he is 92 years old or years young. He's a biologist that since he was 10 or 11 years old, he asked himself, what is the living that dies? What is the nature of that living? How is it that a dead cat and a rock, like, what is the difference? And when he started asking himself about that, he realizes that it was not a question about life as something transcendental. It has to be a mechanism, a process that is happening there. So some years pass, he goes into study biology and anatomy, and he realizes in the 60s, which was in that period groundbreaking, that we are molecular entities that produce themselves. We are circular dynamics that produce themselves. And that entails that we are discrete entities. Discrete entities, it means that we are close within ourselves. And the shifting element that appeared for him at that time was realizing that our nervous system operates in a closed manner. So we cannot access an external reality. We can only speak about what that stimuli that there is outside triggers within us. So the question about reality or truth vanishes, because the roots or the fundaments from which our own reality arises is our own physiology. That's why Umberto and Ximena say that we are cultural biological entities. And the main shift that creates is that the basis for understanding our human living and living together is not anymore a truth or a reality or an ontology, as philosophy has always put, reality is this way, but shifting the equation to acknowledging that our perception and the way in which we let our world appear is what constitutes the ontology, is what constitutes the reality we live. And if we do not have the capacity to reflect autonomously about the foundations from which we are seeing the world, we will continue in spaces of misunderstanding, miscommunication, and detaching from one another. And when Ximena started understanding this, that there is no one reality, but as many reality as people exist, she invited Umberto to expand these reflections to understanding the nature of pain and suffering, as well as well-being within our living together. It was an invitation to bring this fundamental knowledge about our constitution and to put it at service of collaboration, well-being, and a better living together. So Matristica has been for the past 20 years training thousands and thousands of people, giving talks in many different places, particularly trying to understand how can we create virtuous communities of collaboration. And I believe that the path that I have, the assist that I have taken from Humberto and Jimena by accompanying them in this past 20 years, for which I've been really fortunate, it is to how to create this virtuous connection between this spiritual and physical regeneration that we all go through when we start working on our own development, to move to a regeneration in culture, a regeneration in the manner in which we relate to each other, which will hopefully end up in a sense of humbleness, openness, and compassion towards Gaia, towards the Mother Nature that sustains us, all of us here, not only as human beings. So maybe that's kind of in a nutshell.
Thank you. That's opened up a whole load of different questions. But wonderful. Thank you. So how does that, can you say some, give some concrete examples? So it's about creating a different kind of culture, or a different way of being or communicating?
Yes. Basically what we are doing with Matristica is invite people who have questions and curiosity to deepen in a process of reflection. By the culture and the life that we live nowadays, that most of us or most of people lives in a rush in which things happen out there. It was the lady that was in front of my car, or it was the cashier that was so obnoxious, or life is so bad to me that these things happen. Sometimes we put things out there as a reality. We carry on with beliefs or biases to which we don't know, we don't give much time to reflect upon. And by cultural biological basis that Humberto and Jimena have developed, that opens up for us the opportunity to reflect upon ourselves, to reflect about our criteria of validation, to understand that hearing is not the same as listening, that I may hear a lot of the things that my teacher is saying, but if I do not listen and pay attention to in which domain what he or she is saying makes sense. It's not only about the information. We get lost nowadays in that everything is in the information that I sent you, Adrian. You can find all the answers there. But we as human beings, we don't operate like that, because many of the things that we have created in this culture operate as independent from the individuals, because they have to scale. They have to get to all the people. But we lose track of the fact that we transform each other in living together with others. And there is a whole chunk of that transformation that we experience that remains unconscious in our daily living. So understanding the basis of cultural biology puts towards us, this is my view, first, basic insights about how we are constituted, about the nature of language, about the nature of listening, about the nature of our feelings and emotions. Second, it puts crucial questions, reflective questions, that operate as kind of singularities in our living, like really reflecting upon how do I know what I know? Going to the epistemological basis of how is it that for example, people who are living discrimination, why is it that I discriminate? Or do I discriminate? Is there something within me that makes me behave in that way or another? Even though, for example, I've always been or thought that I was someone who did not discriminate, but sometimes unconsciously I can find myself doing discrimination, maybe not as a tax, but maybe in a passive manner. And to have the capacity to go over and review those fundaments give us always the freedom to choose, because we are aware. If we do not know, how can we choose? And lastly, but not least, I also think that the one crucial element that Matristica provides is accompanying people in the process. Because it's not always easy to go deep and to reflect and to acknowledge, where did I learn to be insecure? Or how is it that I learned to be angry at certain situations? Or how is it that I learned to not respect myself? Those are things that many times moves us, touch us. They may cause some pain as well, because it's looking at our fears and our pain right to its face. So what we do in Matristica, I think, is providing those three core elements: knowledge from a scientific basis, second, crucial epistemological questions, and epistemology in this meaning, in this sense, means from where I'm seeing things, basically, and third, to provide the accompaniment and the process for people to engage in this process in a virtuous, collaborative, and regenerative way, instead of with tests, assignments, control, are you wrong or you're not wrong, which in this case makes no sense at all. We are always right in what we are doing. The question might be then if it is adequate or inadequate, or opportune or inopportune to the moment that we are living every time, every moment.
It sounded like self-awareness is one of the key to this process. Yeah.
Yes, and in that sense, awareness or consciousness, like Humberto and Jimena once told me, very simple. Sebastian, like, you can go and read many things about consciousness and transcendence and things like that, and are beautiful reflective journeys. However, awareness and consciousness is simple. It's being aware. Not more and not least than that. Being aware, just like, for example, when I used to talk with my little nephew, that when he had all of his Legos, like on his bedroom, being like a public danger to anyone who was walking there barefoot, and just asking him, are you aware that maybe your dad or your mom may step on those pieces and they will get hurt? Oh, I did not realize. I'm going to put them in the box. That is awareness. That is consciousness. For me, sorry. That's how I live it, like being aware. So I also would like to put the question there. How aware are we of the present we are living? How aware are we of our participation into this moment that we are living in our family, in our workplace, in larger society? How aware are we? That's a deep question that has been accompanying me this past COVID months.
Oh, that's a big question for us all to ponder, isn't it? How aware are we? Does Matristica have particular strategies to help people to deepen their awareness of these things?
Yes, that is something that we have been developing for the past years. Humberto and... Okay, so people... Yes, Humberto and Jimena created this organization, but we're talking about a counselor and a biologist who were like so fascinated by the way they were developing that they just said, we gotta share it. So they created an organization, and they consider themselves as Boy Scouts of reflection, like always ready to be there to reflect. So initially, the main things that we were doing were writing books, doing courses and seminars, and that's it. However, later on, with the collaboration of other colleagues in Matristica, we started entering a little bit more into accompanying organizations, identifying and solving the pains that were hurting them the most within organizations, within businesses. And second, creating and facilitating different programs by which we accompany people in their own reflexive journey. That will be the certification program that I believe also Ximena talked about. So a little example, the online training program where people from all over the world come, get together in a group of learning that we create and that I as a mentor accompany. We connect and accompany them for 6 months in this journey of first acquiring this basic understanding from autopoiesis to language, going through structural determinism, nervous system, communication, validation criteria, all the whole deal, the whole pack. But also we create these communities of people of similar interest, of similar questions, and they get together and they reflect every week together. And also I jump in once a month and accompany them in their reflections, in their questions, in their whatever. And for example, another strategy, like a big Brazilian company that was present in 8 countries, they were having a pain, I will say, in terms of the fear of their organizational culture to vanish in the process of growing. So what we did is that we accompany the top management first into raising awareness about why culture within an organization is crucial. Culture, the manner of being together there, what are the criteria of validation? Do they listen to each other or not? Do they respect to each other or not? What is the purpose that is there? And how I become a conscious and an autonomous actor within that. And then what we did was quickly inverse the relationship and start working with the people at the stores that they had, and they mashing them all up together in order for bridging those gaps of the natural hierarchies of 99.9% of the organizations to create a collaborative and co-creative situation of culture design. And then what we did, it was accompany the heads of all the different countries into bringing down that culture from the people who clean up to the general manager. Because if it is a manner of living together, it doesn't matter what role you have in the organization, you still interact to people, you still say hi, hopefully. You still ask, how are you feeling today, hopefully. So those are the different things that we do in that sense.
Great. A couple of things I wanted to pull out of there. One, the way you described culture, I think you said culture is a way of being together.
Yes, in my understanding, for example, I've had the privilege, this strange privilege in these last months of traveling through Europe and particularly through Italy. And when I see the different culture that I can feel in Milan or in Napoli, in the south, what you see is a different manner of living together, a different manner of engaging in conversations. In your culture, that is allowed, but in mine, it's not. What am I saying in the end? I'm saying that there are certain behaviors that are legitimate in certain networks of conversation and living together, while in other manners of living together, in other networks of conversation, is not adequate. So yes, we have big cultures that we can identify, like the Western culture. But when we zoom in, we could say that subcultures appear, the North American one and the Canadian one. Yeah, we can say that they are subcultures and we can do it like in that level of from the macro to the micro. But in the end, any particular manner of living together that we as observers identify appears as a particular culture. It depends on how high are you watching. Are you watching just in a company, or are you watching at a country level? But that depends on the domain of observation of the observer, I will say.
So is it fair to say that some cultures will create more pain and some cultures will create or bring more love into the into the interactions? Is that fair to say?
Yes, that is a good question. I feel that, first of all, it all depends on how you live a particular culture. It's not the culture itself as the network, but it's how the person experiences it. Yes, we can see certain particular cultures that have more regularities than other in terms of the generation of pain and suffering. But there, I believe that it's all about how each person experiences the culture, and also how free and autonomous are people to live within that. For example, just a basic example, I've heard people going to India and having such a dramatic and different experience of the Indian culture. Some persons that go there and get blown away by the spirituality and the connection, the meditation and all that you can explore in India, but other people that just get astonished by the poverty they see. So what is it? Is it just the culture, or is it the way in which I engage in it? Yes, also we can say that, for example, the countries that are living in conflict nowadays. Yes, for sure those are going to be countries that are generating more pain and suffering than others. Like, for example, particularly, even though I'm here in Italy now, I am Chilean. And in Chile now, we are living and experiencing a deep social crisis that is bringing to the edge a process that began with Pinochet in 73. Now we are, the society is asking for changing the constitution. And you can feel it when I talk to my friends, to my family, when I see the news. There is anger, there is resentment, there is a demand for justice, for more equality. And there are a lot of manifestations and riots. But by the end of the day, deep down in each person's feeling, it's up to them to choose how they are going to live and experience the moment. Is it feeding more pain and suffering, or is it looking for the inner strength or the inner light within us to live in a different manner, that situation? This also reminds me of Mandela when he was in prison. He felt as free as he could ever be, even in a prison. Why? Because the freedom was within him as an autopoietic molecular entity producing himself.
You've used the word autopoiesis, yes, a couple of times, and I'm guessing it's not going to be that familiar. Is it easy to sum it up in a few words for people?
Yeah. Well, autopoiesis is one of the concepts that made Umberto Maturana famous. So that's why it's an important word. And basically, autopoiesis is the answer that Umberto provides to this question: what is living? What is the living? A molecular autopoietic entity, auto, self, poiesis, came from Greek, poiein, which means production. And we as human beings and all living beings are molecular autopoietic entities that produce themselves. These are things that are all of our mothers and dads and grandmas particularly know pretty well. When they are trying to stuff us like with potatoes and vegetables and things, they are telling me, like, come on, eat this, it will crumble into little pieces in your body, and that will become your muscles, your bones, and your all the energy you need to go outside and play. And all of that, we do it. It's our own physiology. We produce some ourselves. Since the moment in which we start forming ourselves in the womb of our mothers, up to the moment in which we give our last sigh, our last breathing, it's a continuous process. It's a process that begins here and ends up here. There is no stopping it. There is no, okay, I'm gonna take a break of producing myself. We're always in that constant process of self-production. And things happen to us along that way of self-producing ourselves, as is all, it also does to all the rest of the animals. The only peculiarity that we human beings have is that we can talk about that. We can observe that. And we can say, geez, it's not feeling that well the way in which I'm producing myself in this particular place. How come? And we step back and we reflect. So also, and this brings us to this important topic, that is one crucial ability, skill, gift, whatever you want to call it, that we human beings have, the capacity for reflecting, the capacity to speak about the things that we speak, to reflect upon our behavior, and also the capacity to consciously care. We, in this whole planet, this blue marble floating in the universe, we are the only ones who can care about other people getting COVID. We are the only people who can care about the destruction of ecosystems. We are the only one who can care that we are trashing, polluting, and heating up our home up to an unlivable degree that we may experience in 50 more years if we keep it up this way. And even though we are the only ones who can care, we all have been raised and brought up in a culture that makes it challenging not to care, but to act accordingly, I believe.
Does that begin to lead us onto this whole idea of a spiritual, cultural, ecological regeneration?
Oh, yes. That has been something that has been kind of blowing my mind these last few years. This idea of regeneration, I got it through a regenerative agroecology. That was kind of my entryway to it. Like, I was fascinated how people were taking dirt, soil that was completely dead, and in 2 years, like, having fruits and vegetables and artichokes and things growing there. And wow, yes, we can bring life back from death in that level. And then I started thinking also, like, our own spirituality and our human nature seems to be a little bit dead as well today. When we see that we continue resolving things through war, when we continue solving things for the benefit of a few in terms of their money, at the cost of many others, at least to me, that tells me it's a little bit of humanity is dead there. So in order to transform the ecology, in order to transform culture, first is how I approach it, is how I experience it, is how I live it. Every cultural change begins by a process of individual transformation. If I don't transform the way in which I relate to others, the relational space with others won't change. So if I want to see, if I want to change things out there, first I have to change how I behave to that. And I believe that in spirituality, understanding spirituality as enhancement of awareness, enhancement of consciousness, that's the starting point for me. And it is a spirituality that happens in the body. It happens in me. It's my sensoriality. It's my feeling of elation after a nice meditation session. The spiritual experience, in the end, is still an experience that I experience in my body. Is it the universe experiencing itself within me, or me experiencing the universe? My body is there present anyway. So in order to start moving in this process of regeneration, I believe that we are the first step. A spiritual process of transforming the way in which we approach life, in which we approach our existence. And I believe that only then, in that process of personal growth, that process of becoming aware, of becoming accountable as well, which is not always easy, it opens up the opportunity to engage with others at a different frequency of connection, at a different, for resonating in a different manner with others. If we are not aware on how we are resonating, how can I be able to see how you resonate? How could I be able to connect or not connect with you? So I believe that this kind of triad that happens simultaneously of a spiritual, physical regeneration with a cultural regeneration in the way in which we relate to others, my trust and my hope, deep, deep hope, is that while living one step further in that direction, I think that we human beings will be able to resonate in a level of humbleness and compassion that will result, hopefully spontaneously, in a process of regeneration of the ecology. Because when we connect to our human nature and we resonate there, inescapably, we become also aware and conscious of the magnificent, bigger intelligence from which we came. Which for me is Gaia. There's nothing more amazing and intelligent and plastic than Gaia, I think.
Wow. So what kind of struck me there was a personal thing, this sense of when we spirituality classically, it's this transcendent thing, it's out there somewhere, and you're talking about an embodied spirituality, which to me is really exciting.
yes, in my case, I think that has been the approach that I have gotten, probably thanks to one of my teachers as well, even though I never met him, Alan Watts, by whom I still remember from Alan Watts, and also a Chinese master that I met, Master Wai Jin Nan, where I discovered this virtuous and wonderful capacity of breathing, and breathing being a crucial doorway to spirituality, to connect into a different realm, to a different way of feeling and experiencing the moment. This capacity of breathing while being at the same time both an involuntary and a voluntary process, that we can say, yes, I breathe because I'm so angry, I don't know, or I can just not think about breathing and I will breathe anyway. So for me, breathing has been kind of this doorway of connecting with this embodied spirituality, because I can feel the transformations, I can feel the expansion, or I can feel the contraction when I'm breathing. And the capacity to bring our awareness to different levels and realms, just by putting a little bit more or a little bit less of oxygen in us, I think it's wonderful. It's been really transformative.
Fabulous. I just want to invite people, if they have any questions, to pop them into the little Q&A box, and we'll touch into some of those as we're going forwards. So is there this sense of regeneration, that would you say that's at the heart of the work of Matrishika?
Good question. I think that Matrishika, we also, different people there, we experience it in different ways. We have our own, all of us have our own interests in curiosity. Like, for example, for Umberto, his main curiosity and interest is how is it that all that knowledge is a biological phenomenon. And that's his jam, you know, that's what he loves, understanding knowledge as a biological phenomenon. For Ximena, her jam is accompanying people to free themselves from the pain that they conserve. That's what she's thrilled about. That's what she loves. In my case, being an amateur mountaineer, being a one day, hopefully full-time pilgrim, I've done Santiago's St. James Way twice. This aspect of the ecology of nature has been so crucial to me in my own process of growth that I believe that that's why regeneration as a concept stuck very deeply in me. And by my experience of pilgrimaging, seeing pilgrimage as a technology for spiritual transformation, for me has been also like something mind-blowing. Like having the experience for 30 days just to walk, that's it. There's nothing else you have to do. Like airplane mode, the cell phone the whole time, no work, no stuff like that, which sounds like amazing, and it is. And while I was in the middle of that, thinking like, why do I have to feel that it is a privilege not to be connected to my cell phone and not having to comply with work? Was it part of the great design to keep us all the time worried 49 weeks a year about work and calendar and Gmail? And by experiencing those 4 weeks of that disconnecting and detaching from the cultural expectations and being able to go inwards and to get to know my physiology. Why does my knee hurt here? Why does my calves are hurting me now? If I make this small adjustment, I feel better. And just being in that process as a mantra, as a meditation in movement, created within me a regenerative process of my own emotion, of my inner sensoriality. And when I see the same approach of connecting as a mantra with nature, I see regeneration happening as well. So I believe that there is something there in the consistency of throwing ourselves to experience this magic of regeneration that comes from awareness of the present moment, of what is happening there, that it has created such an impact to me and an interest in the last years. Being a complete neophyte in all of that, I must say, but happy to be learning along the way.
Sounds like the beginner's mind is serving you well in that.
Yeah.
We have a question here from Nikki, which sort of you touched on there. Nikki says, I'm worried that the process of individual transformation can be quite slow, and this is ongoing, and I think cultural transformation is urgent. Absolutely. What can we do to speed up this process of change?
Oh, wow. Yes, Nikki, I'm there with you with that question, because it's urgent. It's something that needed to happen with the Club of Rome, like actually, like that was the time to do something. But I think that cultural transformation is critical, and culture is the result of a lot of people interacting, basically. Basically, a culture is the way in which different people are living. But in order to change the culture, their behavior needs to be different. Their decision-making should be different. The way in which they see things should be differently. For example, if there is people there still thinking that COVID, it's fake news, there won't be a possibility for them to behave differently, decide differently, if they do not see differently. So, unfortunately, like the individual process of transformation creates awareness, expands our consciousness. It expands the way in which we see. And when we expand the way in which we see, we can choose. And we can choose to transform our culture. Because if not, the other way to create cultural change in that address has never been fruitful for society, which is dictatorships. Just one guy saying, okay, things change. But wait, things change. And we all know that that's not work. Like the cultural change that I believe that we need to generate today should be a conscious democratic transformation. We must be agree, we must be aligned on that. We can create all the cultural change in terms of recycling, for example, but if does not make sense to people, glass and paper and plastic will go all together because it does not make sense to them. A different aspect here also I would add to Nikki that I think that is implied in what she said is these things about agency and structure. There is our capacity of agency, of acting, of enacting, of doing things. And that is a place of transformation, but there is also the structural level of transformation, of decision-making of the larger structures. And those need to change as well. So we have quite a challenge, but I'm so happy to see that there are events like this, that these are like a catalyzer, hopefully, for this expansion, both of individual transformation and also cultural change. So Nikki, we are all here in the right track, I hope, and it's just about making our light shine shinier by being together and from that wave of energy to contribute to change.
Brilliant. There's another question here from AJ. I think you've kind of just answered it, but I'll just say it anyway. Okay. How does individual regeneration impact systemic regeneration? Do we need to rely on top-down policy changes for saving our planet?
Okay, let me go back. How does individual regeneration impact systemic regeneration? I believe that when we talk about systemic, we are talking about a whole bunch of different elements interacting between them. The thing is that we human beings as individuals, the way in which we see that system changes when we change. If we do not change, we will see that people behaving as conservatives as usual. Oh, I don't like them. That's the emotion that they create. But if I change myself and I open myself to a different disposition and I get rid of that emotion that operated as a bias, the system will change as well because I will see it with fresh new eyes. So I believe that it's an ongoing process of I change, hence what I see changes. And when I see that differently, I change as well. So it's an ongoing process of continuous transformation in our present, that when we have the capacity to, we all do, of asking ourselves, what do I want to conserve in this way of feeling and on how I see things there, is critical. And I believe that whether we like it or not, we are always in a process of individual regeneration. Is it on this avenue or in this avenue is the question we have at hand. What is the orientation that we want to give to our process of regeneration? Do I want to take the orientation of disrespecting myself, living in trouble, having a nutrition that makes me sick? I will regenerate in a certain way. But if I choose differently, of nurturing myself with more positive news, of with brilliant conversations like the one with you, Adrian, and many others, of nourishing myself with knowing the facts rather than others telling me what are the facts and whatever, our way of regeneration will be different. And when different people get together on common projects or in common manners of living, a commune, for example, a systemic regeneration happens, depending on which orientation we want to give to our own process and our collective process, of course.
Brilliant. So I think we need to sadly bring this to a close. I think we could probably carry on for a while, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity just to give us a final closing thought on what you would, some sense of a way we might become more embodied.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you, Adrian. First of all, I know nothing. I have no suggestions to make. I have no advice to give. I'm sometimes messing up, as we all do, as well. The first word that appears to me there, and something that I have taken very dearly today, is compassion. Not in the Christian way that I was taught, but more like in the Dalai Lama avenue of that compassion of letting appear, you know, of not to burden ourselves too much into jumping to anxiety or stuff like that, but to be compassionate with our mistakes, to be compassionate with our process, and to understand that others are in their same process. And that is like a balm to our soul. Second, breathing. Thanks to Wim Hof and some many others, and Michael Stone, I believe, that was also part of this event, the magic of breathing. We have such a shallow breathing that when I got to know the marvelous impact of recharging in oxygen was phenomenal, because my sensoriality changed tremendously. And thirdly, giving ourselves, even if you're not an avid meditator, give yourself a precious moment of 5 minutes, 3 minutes of just sitting down quietly, with no cell phone, no Twitter, no Instagram, no, TikTok they use today. 3 minutes between different meetings, between different encounters, just to do a quick checkup. How am I feeling now? Okay, I came from this meeting. I have to go to this one. It's a different space. Gusfrava, it's all good. Let's get on. Those three magical minutes make such a difference in our day-to-day that's a great way, at least for me, to embody the present.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. We've all really enjoyed this. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Aho. And thank you all for all the people that is interested in these things. Spread it out. Like, this is the virus that is worth getting out there, the virus of reflection.
Oh, thank you so much, Sebastian. That was absolutely fabulous. I was busy writing notes the whole way through. If you need a bit more time to digest and take it in like I do, then this video is available for another 48 hours free of charge. And if you need a bit more time, then you can buy the full library of recordings to digest in your own time. And Steve has put that up there for you. I just feel like I got so much from that as I was writing away in the chat there, as you probably noticed. So in addition, if you do purchase the recordings, you'll also receive the notes, a learning list, so you can work your way through all of it in a logical way. and get 50% off if you buy it in the conference. This is a really great way to say thank you to all the people who've put so much work into this conference as well as get your own full dose of embodiment. So the next session on this channel is in 1 hour and is with Sondra Frawley, who defines 6 kinds of phenomenology and their application to dance and ecology. Thank you so much for joining us today. Do feel free to carry on the chat in the Facebook groups, which Steve has posted the links to, as well as the coffee break rooms. I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. It was a pleasure. And thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the conference.